Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Jason Mitchell himself back on the show. He's been doing a lot of fishing. We're going to get a good midwinter update from him. And I know he's been doing a lot of fishing on his home water of Devil's Lake, both perch and walleye, so we're going to get a great update from him on that. Let's get into it here. Jason Mitchell on the JMO Podcast. TKI CNC produces reliable, meticulously crafted marine components for every fishing adventure. Head to their website, tkicnc.com, to find a full listing of their offerings. There you're going to find for this ice season the deluxe TKI sonar shuttle or the collapsible carbon fiber pole mounting kit. For top-of-the-line, American-made fishing equipment, head to tkicnc.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. We're all looking to have the ultimate edge on the water, but how do we get there? When it comes to fishing rods, JT Outdoor Products has you covered. Their technique-specific rods are engineered and tested by tournament professionals to give you the competitive advantage on the tournament trail or the extra edge to the passionate everyday angler. They're hand-built in Farmington, Minnesota. With the highest grade carbon fiber blanks and the finest componentry, JT rods are ultra lightweight, incredibly sensitive, and built for performance. Whether you're after walleye, bass, pike, or panfish, they have every species covered. Their rods deliver precision, durability, and unmatched feel. Don't settle for ordinary. Fish smarter with JT Outdoor Products, where performance meets perfection. Visit them at jtodp.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Do yourself a favor, check them out today. If you have any fishing memory or a fish that you would like to commemorate with a replica, or you have questions about getting fish replicas done, reach out to Jamie Rizavi from Rizavi Taxidermy Studio in New Rockford, North Dakota. Jamie and his crew do next level work. Here at the JMO headquarters, we are blessed to have so many replicas made by Jamie. Reach out. You can find him on social media or online at rizavitaxidermystudio.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. Sealcraft brings innovation and revolution to ice fishing. If you fish early or late ice anywhere, or maybe you fish big reservoirs where ice conditions are constantly changing, basically anywhere that ice can be dangerous, Sealcraft is the solution for safe transport across the ice. For pictures and videos of the brand new Sealcrafts in action, you can find them on Facebook and Instagram. Those links are in the description of this podcast. What is the update since I last had you on?
Well, you know, we had a pretty mild winter, you know, all through January, and then it got cold, you know, so we started getting, you know, that, you know, 30 below zero stuff, 20 below zero plus wind chills. And so I just, you know, I've been just hunkered close to home, you know, and just, you know, finding places where I could, you know, put a flip over up and, you know, fish and try to catch fish without moving a whole lot. Obviously, when it gets, you know, when you're talking 40, 50 below zero with wind chills, everything gets harder, you know. I always joke that sometimes it's hard to fish in those conditions without breaking something, it seems like. But yeah, I've been getting on some perch bites and doing some walleye fishing, basically just fishing close to home here lately. Walleye fishing has been lights out for the most part. Obviously, you don't catch them every day, but it's been good. And, you know, we've got on some pretty decent perch bites as well. You know, sometimes, you know, something that happens, you know, with fishing, you know, especially ice fishing, you know, is, you know, move, you know, that's pretty important. If you're not on fish, you're not going to catch fish, right? You got to find fish. And the only way to find fish sometimes is to just eliminate water and cover water and, you know, try to get on those good bites. And, you know, when it's really cold out, sometimes that can be really tough, you know, just fishing out the car door, for example, or, you know, just moving and, you know, fishing outside, for example, gets really difficult. And, you know, sometimes things like that kind of teach you something too. And it kind of reminds me, you know, there's a lot of different reasons to fish, and there's no wrong reason as long as you're having fun and you're legal, right? But there's a lot of people, for example, that go out with permanent fish houses. They park them somewhere. They spend the weekend. That's, you know, I guess you call it ice camping, right? And, you know, they're watching something on TV or whatever and hoping to catch a fish. And, you know, and there's a lot of people that go out fishing and, you know, they're not able to move all over the place. You know, maybe when I'm 75 years old, God willing, I'm still ice fishing and, you know, I'm not going to be drilling 150, 200 holes a day and moving. And you're trying to figure, okay, how do I drill the fewest number of holes possible and just try to land on some fish, you know? And there's something to be said for that, right? Because that's what a lot of people are forced to do for a lot of different reasons. And, you know, when it's, you know, I guess what you call extreme cold, you know, sometimes it kind of forces your hand and it forces you to fish that way. And there's something to be said for that. There's things to learn. There's, you know, things to figure out. And so like for myself, you know, on these really brutal cold days, I've been fishing off of basin transitions, right? Basically looking at the contour map and the last line, right, before it drops into the basin, I follow that line and I'm looking for like a good inside turn or, you know, some type of indentation that basin sticks into the shoreline a little ways or into the old shoreline in a lot of these prairie lakes. And, you know, kind of, you know, that's one of my favorite types of spots on a basin. And, you know, I mean, there's been a lot of days here in the past week or so, 10 days, where I literally drill one or two holes, right? And I set up, I catch a fish in the first half hour, 20 minutes or so, and I just keep catching enough to, you know, keep me there. And at, by the end of the day, they add up and I've had a great day. I mean, I've had some days where I've, you know, caught my limit of perch or whatever, you know, and, you know, and I've seen that before where sometimes there's something to be said for staying put in a spot where there's fish coming through. You know, as long as you can keep running traffic, as long as you have fish coming through you, underneath you every, you know, half an hour or whatever, they add up, you know. And sometimes I've seen this before where, you know, you get these, you know, really extreme cold snaps where it's hard to move around. And sometimes things kind of open up your eyes, you know. There's a time, place where you don't necessarily have to move around a lot. If you pick a good spot and run traffic, and you don't have anybody around you interfering with that traffic, there's something to be said for that. And it's kind of fun. I'm telling you, it's fun when you can just plop the fish house down, turn up the heat, sit, take your jacket off, or you're sitting in a sweatshirt, and it's miserable outside, and you're sitting inside your fish house, and you're catching fish all day, and at the end of the day, you're, you know, you've got plenty. I mean, that's pretty good. You know, it's so sometimes you kind of get your eyes opened up to that again, you know. So
what are the conditions?
Well, we've got great conditions. I mean, there's a lot of winters where if you didn't have tracks, you weren't getting around. You were going nowhere, like as in nowhere. Like you'd have to maybe walk off Highway 57 down the rocks carrying a bucket, right? I mean, and so the conditions are great. I mean, there's not hardly any snow on the ice. You can drive anywhere you want with tires, you know, whether you have a side-by-side or a pickup or whatever. There's a few drifts, like there's a few days where it's gray and you can't see very good, and you know, especially like along the shorelines, you know, where there's cattails and stuff where it's drifted up a little bit and there's some hard drifts. But for the most part, once you're on the ice, once you're on the lake, there's, you know, at least 2 feet of ice and there's not that much snow. You can drive wherever you want. And you know, there's a few pressure ridges, but they're not bad this year yet. And so the conditions are great. You know, that's the thing is that, I mean, there's some years where, you know, if you didn't have a side-by-side with tracks or a snow bear or the minimum a snowmobile, you weren't going anywhere doing anything. And so I think in that regard, it's a great winter on Devil's Lake. I mean, the ice conditions are super.
What's been your setup or your plan of attack?
Oh, for the perch, if I'm setting up on those deep contour lines, just a 2XL drop tungsten. You know, I love small tungsten jigs for deep water, with like a 4 pound braid, you know, for that deep water. And then I'm putting either wax worms or minnow head or sometimes a perch eye on it. And I find that catches everything. Obviously you're going to catch perch with it. And then if a few walleyes roll through, you'll catch them, you know, for, you know, when I'm fishing walleye, specifically targeting walleyes on shallower structure, you know, I've been finding some pretty aggressive fish, and I've been using Tikka minnows. I've been using glide baits. Rattle spoons are always good. You know, just your basic stuff. I don't, you know, a lot of times those fish, when those walleyes are less than 8 feet of water, especially morning and evening, you know, during that prime time window, I don't really know if it matters a lot what you're using. Those fish are just aggressive. I think it's just more so the attitude you put on that lure. They like that hard bang, that hard, tight, thump, you know, where you're really pounding that jig in one place, you know, raising it up and down through the water column. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that are catching walleyes for sure. I mean, the walleye bites, I mean, yeah, the walleye bite, I think Devil's Lake has got to be one of the most underrated fisheries on the planet for walleyes. When you look at all the attention, like Red Lake gets just for walleyes, or Lake of the Woods gets just for walleyes, you know, a lot of places where people go just for walleyes, you know, people think Devil's Lake, they think perch, obviously, and the perch numbers are down this year, but, you know, the walleye numbers are through the roof, you know, and so it's like, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of destination fisheries that would kill for Devil's Lake's walleye population right now.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, this might be a little controversial, but it seems like online, or like specifically on Facebook, there's some people that are distracted maybe a little bit away from how good the walleye fishing is right now. Like with the, you see it online that the perch numbers are down, but there's a lot of people that talk about, you know, they're never going to catch another perch ever again in Devil's Lake. I'm curious, I haven't been up there. You're talking about fishing up there. What's the, I don't know if you have a response to that or what.
Well, I got a lot of thoughts on it. I mean, there's a lot of negativity on social media. There just is, you know, and there's a lot of people that are just negative on, you know, and maybe there's just unhappy because they maybe haven't had a chance to fish much, and that gives them a lot of chances to put stuff on social media. I don't know, but there's just a lot of disgruntled, unhappy people in the world, or, you know, there's a sense of maybe a little bit of an, you know, being somewhat anonymous, you know, I mean, I think in some cases people even open up fake accounts and stuff, you know, but, you know, I don't know. I mean, the perch numbers are down on Devil's Lake, and they've been down before, you know, I mean, we've seen ups and downs, but I guess what kind of surprises me is just maybe the reaction and then the overreaction where, like, for example, 3 winters ago, we literally had one of the best perch bites that I can remember in 20 years. I mean, it was one of the best winters we've had in years. And then from that, you know, to like last year, for example, the bite was really tough. And I just thought it was because, or no, it was 2 winters ago, but I just thought it was maybe just because we didn't have as much ice as some winters, and we didn't have hardly any snow on the ice. So I just thought there's a lot more fish shallow. And there's a lot more fish spooking, because I saw it on forward facing sonar where, you know, like, it just seemed like there was more perch in that, you know, 8 to 14 foot range than normal. And I just thought it was just because of the lack of snow, and just some of those things can kind of add up where it can, you know, make tougher fishing. But now the nets this past spring confirm, you know, what, you know, people that fish a lake a lot of thought is that the perch numbers seem way, way down. And why is that? You know, and obviously, you know, fishing pressure gets the blame, guides get all the blame, you know, everybody's pointing fingers around, but I think it's way more complex than that. You know, perch on Devil's Lake in particular, you know, they don't live that long compared to some other fisheries. They're very fast growing, and like a 5-6 year old perch is an old perch. And so you think about that. So 3 winters ago, you know, we had a phenomenal bite. Where did all those fish go? They didn't all get caught, I can tell you that, right? But a lot of them might have just died of old age, you know? And then if you have a couple of years where you don't have a good year class, you know, or good reproductive effort, there you go. But what's interesting is people are talking about the perch and how, you know, the guides took them all, right? Well, the pike numbers are way, way down too at the same time, right? Like this has happened at the same time. And nobody's talking about that. Like, well, did the guides take all the pike? No, I can guarantee you that that's not a high on the priority list, you know, right? But I think what's happened is, you know, we had those, you know, those high water cycles. You know, the reproduction was way better. And then now the waters basically stayed the same or dropped now for like 4 consecutive years. Well, now, you know, we're starting to see, you know, maybe some, you know, reproductive effort that hasn't been as successful. Now that doesn't explain everything, because like in the 80s, we had great perch numbers and the lake wasn't high, wasn't climbing, wasn't, you know, but we didn't have all the predation then either. And so I think there's just a combination of things. Like there's the number of walleyes in Devil's Lake, you know, according to the same nets, is really, really high. The number of white bass is you know, those numbers are way high. And so like the pike and perch numbers are down. The walleye and white bass numbers are up. You know, why is that? You know, it's probably, you know, a little bit of a lot of different things, you know, but that, you know, that's just the point to make is that, you know, that's Mother Nature, is that you can't have everything at once, you know? And so my attitude is, okay, you know, so the perch numbers are down. So what? That's one of the best walleye fisheries on the planet. I'm going to go fish for those. Or, you know, I've been still finding some perch around and, you know, and even like, you know, you look at like a 14, 15 inch perch, that's a pretty special fish that you don't find everywhere, you know? And I would say Devil's Lake still got to be one of the very best places in the upper Midwest to try to find and catch that fish, you know? So I don't know. It's, I guess it's kind of puzzling how people react and overreact and then the negativity that comes with it. But goodness, make no mistake. I mean, Devil's Lake is a world-class fishery, you know? You know, it's kind of like going to South Dakota after a bad blizzard. Oh, the pheasant numbers are down. Well, yeah, but you're still going to see way more pheasants than you do in southern Wisconsin or southern Minnesota.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah,
I mean? Like
yeah.
It's, you know, so I don't know. I mean, it's just, it's funny how you know, I guess bad news sells, you know, but yeah, I don't know. And you can definitely tell. I feel like there's way fewer people fishing this winter. And I think it's just because of what they see on Facebook. Somebody sees a bad fish report and there you go. And then, you know, one thing that kind of always strikes me as almost fascinating is, you know, people like, yeah, I fished Devil's Lake for 3 days and I never caught nothing. And well, Devil's Lake's always been that way. Like Devil's Lake isn't an easy lake to fish. Devil's Lake is not a lake to go to if you don't have a lot of fishing experience. Like it's not an easy place for a beginning ice angler to go. It's a big piece of water. It's intimidating. There's a lot of nuance to fishing Devil's Lake in the wintertime. You have to really go and grind and get your teeth kicked in. Now, some people love that. Some people, I got guys that come and stay with us every year from Wisconsin and Michigan and Minnesota. They just love that challenge. And then, but when you the good days are as good as it gets. Like if you fish Devil's Lake a lot, yes, you will get your teeth absolutely smashed in. That's not an easy lake to fish. It never has been. Even the good years, it doesn't matter. You know, it's not an easy lake to fish. And sometimes you can find fish and mark them and you just cannot get them to bite because of the number of freshwater shrimp and invertebrates that are in the lake. The conditions can be brutal, you know, but you know, the good days are as good as ice fishing gets. And I think that's the lure. That's why people like to fish Devil's Lake and why people go there, you know, but yeah, it's funny, you know, people are like, yeah, I fished Devil's Lake for 2 days, only caught two fish. I'm never going back there again. You know, it's like, well, I've had many days where I only caught two fish, you know, it's like, but I still love it. Why? Because the good days are my best days are better than anything, you know? And so yeah, I don't know. The people are funny. You know, I mean, I don't know what else to say on that. You know, it's like, I mean, and I don't blame you for trying to go somewhere else and fish too. I love going different places and fishing, you know, and everywhere I go, you got to drive by fish to get there. So it's just fun experiencing new things and whatever. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how easy fishing is supposed to be, but I feel like, you know, Devil's Lake's a premier fishery, you know. And then the other thing is it's got the infrastructure to support tourism, where, you know, there's hotels, there's resorts, there's guides, there's bait shops, you know, there's all the things, restaurants. There's a lot of great, I mean, there's lakes right now, just, you know, they're not always like this, but like just worth where they're at in a cycle, where they're way better than Devil's Lake. Like I'm talking like some 700 acre slough in Stutzman's County somewhere that's pretty obscure, right? And, but the thing is, where do you stay? Where do you go? Where do you, you know, where do you fill up with gas? You know what I mean? And so, you know, and that's fun for people too. Like I know people that stay in Jamestown, or they stay in Steele, and they go to these different communities and then they go explore. They might have to drive 40 miles or whatever to a particular slough to fish that day. But then the next day they might try a different lake that's 20 miles away. You know, there's all kinds of different things to do, which is pretty cool. But, yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the things though that does make Devil's Lake pretty special is it doesn't matter if you want to rent a snow bear or rent a fish house or, you know, find a cabin or an Airbnb, whatever it is, you know, there's a lot of options. There's a lot of options for a place to eat. You know, and so you don't find that everywhere either. So.
We're all looking to have the ultimate edge on the water, but how do we get there? When it comes to fishing rods, JT Outdoor Products has you covered. Their technique-specific rods are engineered and tested by tournament professionals to give you the competitive advantage on the tournament trail or the extra edge to the passionate everyday angler. They're hand-built in Farmington, Minnesota. With the highest grade carbon fiber blanks and the finest componentry, JT rods are ultra lightweight, incredibly sensitive, and built for performance. Whether you're after walleye, bass, pike, or panfish, they have every species covered. Their rods deliver precision, durability, and unmatched feel. Don't settle for ordinary. Fish smarter with JT Outdoor Products, where performance meets perfection. Visit them at jtodp.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Do yourself a favor, check them out today. TKI CNC produces reliable, meticulously crafted marine components for every fishing adventure. Head to their website, tkicnc.com, to find a full listing of their offerings. There you're going to find for this ice season the deluxe TKI sonar shuttle or the collapsible carbon fiber pole mounting kit. For top-of-the-line, American-made fishing equipment, head to tkicnc.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. If you have any fishing memory or a fish that you would like to commemorate with a replica, or you have questions about getting fish replicas done, reach out to Jamie Rizavi from Rizavi Taxidermy Studio in New Rockford, North Dakota. Jamie and his crew do next level work. Here at the JMO headquarters, we are blessed to have so many replicas made by Jamie. Reach out. You can find him on social media or online at RizaviTaxidermyStudio.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. Sealcraft brings innovation and revolution to ice fishing. If you fish early or late ice anywhere, or maybe you fish big reservoirs where ice conditions are constantly changing, basically anywhere that ice can be dangerous, Sealcraft is the solution for safe transport across the ice. For pictures and videos of the brand new Sealcrafts in action, you can find them on Facebook and Instagram. Those links are in the description of this podcast. There's some Tony Dean episodes from back in the 90s that you might remember, but I find it interesting because I've watched all these things and I get a huge kick out of them. But You guys were talking back in the 90s with Tony Dean about how, you know, these high perch cycles were kind of, were in the past, and, you know, it had been years since, we really heard about the great perch fishing on Devil's Lake, but the walleye numbers are way up, but the sentiment was way different. It seemed like you guys were kind of just celebrating good walleye fishing, back then. I'm sort of curious if you kind of think about that ever, like, you know, maybe there's a lot of anglers that maybe weren't around long enough to see that this is, you know, stuff like this, you know, or some different version of it has happened before. This is like these perch cycle.
Oh yeah. I mean, we've been seeing ups and downs, and we've seen, you know, really tough fishing for perch, and then, you know, all the above, right? And there was years, for example, where the pike fishing was unbelievable. I mean, there was years where, you know, you go in any back bay on Devil's Lake or any of the feeder lakes in 3 to 7 feet of water, and you'd put four tip-ups on. By the time you put your fourth tip-up out, the first tip-up already had a flag. Like, that was, that was a thing very common for, you know, years at times. And so, yeah, we've seen all these different cycles before. And the lake kind of takes care of itself. I mean, you know, the other thing that's interesting too, like, Devil's Lake hasn't been stocked with perch for many, many years. I want to say over 20 years. And some of that's by design. I mean, perch are a prolific fish. They generally can take care of themselves from a reproductive effort standpoint. And a lot, you know, at the same time, North Dakota had so many small lakes that didn't have any fish in them. And well, the only way you're going to get fish in them is to stock them. And so a lot of the, a lot of the attention and focus from the fisheries was put on those small lakes, you know, to create more and new opportunities. And I think a lot of anglers don't understand, perch are a very difficult, and you could even argue an expensive fish to raise in a hatchery. They're right up there with walleyes, or even more difficult. And so that's why a lot of times in the Game and Fish Department, when they'll stock a lake, they'll transplant fish whenever they can. You'll notice that, where they'll just they'll go in and net whatever it is, you know, 3,000 stunted perch from a lake where the fish just aren't getting any bigger, and they're full of stunted perch, and they'll go drive them 20 miles down the road and put them in a new lake, and a lot of times those fish will explode, you know, because a lot of them are technically adults where they'll be carrying eggs, and even a stunted perch can create a lot of eggs, and so you can stock a fishery that way in a hurry, and that's a solution because perch are so hard to raise in a hatchery. And the other thing, I think the thing that we as an angling community in North Dakota we probably have to have a conversation about is that, you know, we might have to lobby our government officials for another hatchery in the state, you know, because we had North Dakota had two phenomenal hatcheries, Valley City and then the Garrison Dam hatchery. Well, ever since zebra mussels got into Ashtabula, that Valley City hatchery is really limited. They'll only stock those fish in lakes that have zebra mussels. Well, in North Dakota so far, that's not very many lakes, knock on wood, right? And so now we're basically down to one hatchery. And so, you know, the thing is, you know, we've seen like when we have water in the Dakotas, we have these phenomenal fishing opportunities. It doesn't matter if it's Missouri River reservoirs or if it's these, you know, small inland prairie lakes. And we've seen that over the last 30 years, we've had this wet cycle. Sooner or later, that wet cycle will come to an end. It's been going up and down since the last glacier melted in North Dakota, you know. And when we say we go into a 20-year stretch where it's, you know, where the precipitation is lower than average and all these sloughs start to dry up, you know, what's going to happen? You know, these lakes are going to have to get stocked and they're going to have to be almost like a put and take thing, you know? And so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like the Game and Fish Department gets put in a tough spot because a lot of average anglers, it's like they think that there's can be something done to like manage a great lake that's say like, whether it's Devil's Lake where you've got, you know, it's over 200,000 acres of water when you add everything up, or whether it's just a small lake that's 1,000 acres or less, like there's something that can be done to where you have 12-inch perch that are biting like crazy and just keep it that way, right?
Yeah.
Whether, you know, ban non-residents, you know, keep those Minnesota boys at home. Ban guides. They're the rapers and pillagers. They're taking from the resource and not contributing anything. And, you know, you got all these fingers pointing around, but at the end of the day, boy, I wish it was that simple. Like, I wish there was something you could do, you know, because, you know, first of all, when these lakes start to dry up, it's such, like, consider the challenges. If you have a high water cycle, for example, and pike can transfer into a new lake, that can disrupt a jumbo perch lake, right? Because then all of a sudden those numbers explode, and yeah, there's still perch there and they're big, but they all get eaten, you know. You've got cormorants that can come into other lakes, and then you got another lake 10 miles down the road that went from 12 feet to 8 feet, and now it's, you know, you got winter kill, and all those fish are floating upside down along the shorelines in the spring, dead, you know. And, you know, you just got these cycles, you know. And I don't know if you can get away from the cycle. Like, I don't know if you can beat that, you know.
Right.
Like in the 90s, for example, like when I was in high school in the early 90s, I want to say the Game and Fish managed like 120 lakes in North Dakota, and now it's almost 400. You know, so you think about all those additional opportunities, you know, that have just been created, you know, that are fairly new, you know, one generation. And, you know, how do you maintain that? I almost think you almost have to anticipate and recognize the cycle, and you almost have to embrace it. So the fishing, what I'm saying is the fishing's good over here 1 year, take advantage of it. Why? Because, you know what, next year, you know, if you have a summer kill or a winter kill or whatever, boom, that's done. And then, you know what, the next winter, you might have to drive 30 miles over here. This lake is firing. Like be an opportunist. Like right now on Devil's Lake, one of the highest walleye populations we've ever had. The number of 3 to 5 pound walleyes in that lake right now is the highest that I've seen in my career. Okay. Take advantage of it. And then next year when it's something different, take advantage of that. Like be an opportunist, you know, versus thinking that you can stop and set Mother Nature in stone and, okay, this is how we need to be, and we're going to control all human influences and do all these different things to try to, you know, conserve it. I mean, those are romantic ideals, but, you know, I don't think it's that simple. You know, and the other thing is, maybe it's time where there could definitely be a conversation in North Dakota lowering the perch limit where, you know, right now it's 20. If you know, like South Dakota's 10, for example, it doesn't seem to hurt their tourism, but it might not, I don't think it's going to change anything as far as the ups and downs of the cycle, but maybe it prolongs it, where if you have a lake that's really hot and firing, maybe instead of it lasting 1 year and being done and gone, maybe it lasts 2 years. You know, like you can maybe spread out the opportunities to more people and prolong it. I think that makes sense. I don't know. I mean, you know, as far as like, you know, the other thing I've seen online is, you know, people want to increase the fees for guides, you know, whatever. And yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's anybody more vested than a guide. I mean, I think if you were to tell most guys, hey, we want to charge you guys $1,000 more a year, but we're going to put it all back into the fisheries to make the fishing even better. I mean, I think most people would nod their head, to be honest with you, right? I don't think anybody's against, you know, creating more resources and more opportunities, you know, and there's people that argue that, you know, the guides that are making a living off of that, they're taking away from the opportunity or the resource more than anybody. But here's the caveat to that. Say if you have a full-time guide, which there's not many guys that are full-time that are making a living doing this, right? Where they're paying quarterly tax returns. I would say in the ice fishing, there's less than 30 in the state of North Dakota. Okay. Well, less than that. But with that being said, if they are taking non-resident, say they're taking four non-resident anglers out most days and they're buying licenses and they fish for 4 days and go home, that's a lot of money getting stuck back into the kitty, right? And so you look at, like, say, like Griggs County, right? Or Eddy County, it don't matter. You know, some county with a sparse population, if you said, okay, we're just going to make this where you have to live in the county in order to fish it, right? You have to live in Anamoose if you're going to fish Antelope Lake. How many licensed anglers are in that whole county? You know, less than 1,000, right? And so you can either have a choice, okay, we're going to ban everybody and ban everything and just keep this lake all to ourselves, okay, but your fishing license might be over $1,000 a year. Or do you spend less than $30 a year to have a resident, you know, seasonal fishing license, annual fishing license, and, you know, somebody else is basically paying for it, you know, and that's, you know, something I think sometimes people forget. You know, you could have a private lake, like nobody's stopping somebody from, I mean, there's all kinds of sloughs in North Dakota that aren't public that are deep enough to support fish. You know, if you got $1 million laying around, you could buy, you know, 500 acres around a lake, you know, yeah. What I mean? And have your own private lake. I mean, I know a few private lakes that people say it's good. I've never been able to fish there, you know, I mean, it's private, right? And guys, you know, stock them, whether it's illegally or legally, whatever, you know, I mean, that's an option, but is it realistic? No. I mean, who's going to spend $1 million to, you know, buy a perch slough, right? But that's an option. And but that, you know, that's on the other end of the extreme, right? And so when you look at this, for the less than $30 that it costs for an annual fishing license, it's like it's the best deal in the world, you know. But if you don't have, you know, like I think when I was done guiding or retired from guiding, I want to say the guide service or the licensing was right around $500 a year, okay? I don't know. I don't even remember what the non-resident license is now. What is it, about $75? But, you know, it's way more than the $30, you know? And so, yeah. Now, can all those rates be raised? Like, say we say, hey, we need another fish hatchery in North Dakota. How are we going to pay for it? Well, let's do this, this, and this. I mean, I think everybody wants the same things. I think people would agree on that. Like, okay, we got to raise our rates to do this and this and this so we can have great fishing. Sign me up, right? I mean, mm-hmm. It's not like anybody's, you know, resisting or fighting solutions, you know, but I don't know. People are funny, you know, because here's what I find interesting is that if the Game and Fish Department would have done nothing, people would have screamed, oh, Devil's Lake never stocks. They never do this. They never do that. And then they say, okay, we're going to relocate, you know, a bunch of perch in Devil's Lake this spring because the perch numbers are down. Well, then people scream about that. It's like, well, whatever they do, they're, you know, yeah. they don't ever get enough credit. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't agree with the Game and Fish Department on some things, but I feel like with the fishing in particular and the fisheries, we've got one of the best in the country. I mean, we really do. It's like if you have a real hard time with how our fisheries are managed in North Dakota, it's like just go somewhere else. You know, and a lot of times I feel like North Dakota over time has been vindicated. You know, like the simplicity of the regulations, for example. I feel like over time now, some of those you know, some of that mentality, the mindset, you know, the strategy that they use has been vindicated, where now you know other states are trying to copy what North Dakota's doing, you know. And so, yeah, I feel like we're lucky in that department. Could it be better? Sure, but we've got a lot to be thankful for. You know, you look at Facebook and all the negativity and stuff. It's like, if these people just went out and fished, they'd feel so much better about their day. You know, that would be my take on it. So,
yeah, but I you know, just getting back to that, but the perch cycling, you know, it's like, it is kind of a bizarre mentality. I guess it's just bizarre to me, because I just couldn't see myself thinking this way. But, you know, even if you did shut down all the guide services everywhere, in every non-resident everywhere, and you had your own private lake, you would still experience the cycle of perch.
Sure.
If you didn't have the reproductive, like anybody that has a perch slough right now, is it, you know, Mother Nature is doing the same thing to all those, you know. So it's like you would find out pretty darn quickly that you'd rather have the whole system, the whole package, where you have the guide services bringing in the non-residents that fish for a few days and go home, and then you have that kitty of money so that when there is sort of a, you know, some type of an emergency going on, that you can afford to maybe take action in some way, shape, or form. But without that, it's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I've seen like lakes that just flew out of the radar, that fishing pressure wasn't a factor at all, right?
Right.
And the lakes were stocked, and all of a sudden they were, in some cases, like I remember one lake, it had a reputation as being a camera lake. Like if you weren't using an underwater camera, you couldn't catch them. The perch were huge, but they were so hard to catch. And I think it was just a deal where you had low population densities of fish, lots of invertebrates, because you have a brand new lake that never had fish in it before. So there's endless amounts of invertebrates, freshwater shrimp, for these fish to eat. They were temperamental, they were fussy, but they were big, okay? And then 3 or 4 years went by, and it's like all those big perch had a really good spawn, and now all of a sudden it went from being a few big fish and they're hard to catch to all of a sudden you drill a hole, there'd be 2 feet of stunt of small perch wherever you went in the lake, you know? And then something happened, like a lot of times a winter kill can be great long, you know, for a lake, as long as you get the water back, because it takes out all the competition, and the fish that are left just grow bigger, they grow faster. And you know, so you'll see those cycles even without the human interference or the human factor, you know. Absolutely. And so, yeah, and you know, the thing that probably doesn't get said enough either is that, you know, it is a renewable resource. Okay, you put fish in a lake, you catch them, and if you want more fish in the lake, you can stock more. And like even like some of the comments on Facebook, you know, for example, there's different management principles and biology with different species of fish, right? For example, bluegills are completely different than perch, especially perch that are out on the prairie, okay? Where you've got a perch that, you know, again, 5, 6, 7 years old, that's about as old as they get, and then they're done, right? But they grow fast. And that's kind of a general theme with fisheries in general, is that if you have a fish population that grows extremely fast, they don't live long, or they don't, you know, they have short lifespans versus slow growth rates. The fish have a tendency to live longer as a rule of thumb. But you know, you'll hear people like, oh, you savages, you know, you're keeping all those female perch full of eggs. It's like, well, I don't know if you've ever noticed this, Taylor, but like 98% of the perch you catch are female. Do you ever notice that?
Yeah.
It's not like a 50-50 split. Like some fish species, it seems like half the fish are males, half the fish are females. Perch are, again, biologically different. Like every once in a while, you'll catch a male, and they're usually a lot smaller, and they don't have any eggs, and they got more stripes. Like they look different, right? But it's like 1 out of 20 is a male perch, like in a day of fishing. And so like all the fish you catch, whether they're 6 inches or whether they're 15 inches, you know, like again, over 90% of them are female, you know. And so tell me that you've never caught perch without telling me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, all these experts on Facebook, oh, throw back the females. Like, so you're saying you don't keep any perch? Like you're not supposed to ever keep a perch, you know? And so it's funny how, you know, people get, it's like the same guy that, oh, I can't believe you're catching those lake trout out of that deep of water, barrel trauma. It's like, oh, time out here, idiot. You know, they burp air. Like, you, lake trout don't get barrel trauma, you bonehead, you know, but they must have saw that somewhere and just, you know, everybody's got an opinion without a lot of information, you know? So I don't, you know, it's, it's I suppose the negativity will never go away, but at the end of the day, at the end of the day, you can't go wrong just, getting information and educating people and, and showing, laying out the facts, showing all the cards on the table so that way people can make their own educated decision. And I think once you get that, then, you get people kind of rowing in the same direction. So.
Yeah, and I mean, the walleye fishing, like if you got time to have a tough day chasing perch and then, spend some time being negative on social media, obviously the good walleye opportunity is in your blind spot. And I think we, celebrating that is like that's what we ought to be looking for, 'cause it's interesting. Like you know me, I mean, I'm paying attention to the tournament stuff, and I'm always trying to be on top of it, or just kind of paying attention to that stuff. And the stuff that's going on with the walleyes, in terms of like tournament weights and stuff like that in the summertime, and then kind of validate a little bit, like you said, with the netting, the fisheries data, that the walleye populations are up. But it's, dude, the stuff going on with the walleyes on Devil's Lake right now is, it almost seems unprecedented, even on Devil's Lake standards.
Oh yeah, I mean the weights in tournaments anymore, it's ridiculous. Now some of it's forward facing sonar, that's increasing the weights, but again the fish have to be there to catch them, right?
Right, right.
And so when you have that many big weights, it's like, well, the fish are there. And yeah, and it's funny, like, even like people are blaming forward facing sonar for the perch, and that should be banned too, right? Well, use forward facing sonar over at East Devil's Lake or Stump Lake at 40 feet of water and report back how great it works.
If everybody was using forward sonar for perch on Devil's Lake, yeah, like that would be the best thing for the perch. The perch wouldn't have much to worry about if everybody targeting perch was using forward
Yeah.
sonar.
Isn't that funny? It's like,
Yeah.
yeah, because they don't suspend, they're tight to the bottom, and the separate target separation is bad with forward facing sonar. And so, yeah, again, or I saw one comment like, yeah, between the guides and all that sight imaging, they're like, there's no perch left in Devil's Lake. I was thinking, wow,
Yeah,
sight
yeah, yeah,
imaging?
yeah, yeah. Through the ice, yeah. Yeah, that's
Oh,
so bizarre.
goodness.
But it is kind of an interesting, argument. The they talk about hundreds of guides, but you kind of reminded me, or kind of clued me into the idea that, man, most of the, you can talk about how many guide licenses are sold in the state of North Dakota, but that is a very like indescript, statistic on what's really happening out there. This is a lot of people that don't guide full time, or there's just some loopholes to the system a little bit, and it definitely is. I don't really care to see all that spread out there for people that don't know what's going on, that latch onto that and run with it.
So here's the thing, is when I first started guiding, I mean, there was less than 10 guides on the entire lake. And I would argue that there were less than 10. I mean, and there was nobody guiding anywhere else in the state for ice fishing. Okay. Devil's Lake is where it started. And, goodness, now, there's well over 100 guides on Devil's Lake. And there's, I don't know how many guides in the state of North Dakota. But, the thing is on the whole lake, there's less than 30 guys that do it for a living. You got Mark Bry, he's got a handful of guys that are doing it for a living every day. You've got Jason Feldner, he's got a handful of guides. You've got Perch Patrol, you've got a handful of guys that are working independently. It's less than 30. Okay. And so, but now are there now do the part-time guides add up? Sure they do, but you got to remember a lot of it is, say a guy retires and he always wanted a snow bear and he couldn't really figure out how to do it. License yourself with the state of North Dakota, you open up an LLC and you claim losses for 2 or 3 years as long as you can get away with it. And now you depreciate your snow bear, and that's fine. I mean, that's an IRS issue, but, as far as active guides that are making a living, yeah, there's way more than there ever was before, but it's not like, the number is inflated because most people aren't doing it for a living. And if you're not doing it for a living, you're not doing it every day. So, I mean, Yeah, I don't know. It's and the thing is how do you, and so here's the old thing too, is how do you draw a line? This is where it really gets comical and interesting. Okay. The guy living in Drake doesn't think that somebody from Minot or Devil's Lake or Bismarck should come and fish Clear Lake, for example, because it's right down the road. Okay. So he's mad. And then the guy from Minot is mad if a guy from Grand Forks or Devil's Lake comes over. And then the guy from Grand Forks is mad if a guy from Minnesota comes over and fishes the same lake. It's like, who has dibs on it? Like, who has first priority? Is it the guy that lives in the county? Is it the guy that lives in proximity? Like, do I have more of a right to say who can fish on Devil's Lake since I live within a, block of the lake versus somebody that lives in Grand Forks? Like, that's a pretty dangerous, slippery slope. You know what I
Oh,
mean?
yeah.
Especially in a lot of areas where the license revenue doesn't support the projects. You take a brand new cement boat ramp on a lake in the middle of nowhere, where's that money coming from? It's coming from non-residents fishing Lake Sakakawea or the Missouri River system or Devil's Lake, right? I mean, there's not enough licensed anglers in that entire county to pay for one cement boat ramp or for one easement, And so you look at all the layers and all the things that this stuff requires. You got to have a person at the Game and Fish, for example, that's all they do is try to find new lakes and try to figure out easements and working with property owners to figure out ways to access a lake, and then to figure out whether the lake will support fish, and then they stock it. Then you got to have, crews that stock the lakes, and then you got to have enforcement people that, can skateboards that can make sure some people are following the rules. I mean, there's a lot of layers to this, and yeah, and if somebody's got an easier or better answer, I don't know what, I'm all ears, so.
The arguments don't seem real great or real educated online. That is definitely the weird thing. But yeah, good conversations. Good conversation for sure. There's probably, a lot of more people if they just talked in person while they were out on the ice fishing. They spend time on the keyboard. And I don't know, man. It just seems a little bit weird. But Devil's Lake is like, yeah, man. I just fantasize about opportunities to go out there, and I couldn't imagine. Complaining about a perch cycle that is inevitable, with or without, fishing pressure or,
Well,
certain
you can't
things
have
that.
everything at once, right? I mean, so how is it possible biologically to have high white bass numbers, high pike numbers, high perch numbers, high walleye, all at the same time at the same year? I've never seen that in my entire career on Devil's Lake. I mean, when one is up, something is down, and vice versa. It's just changing all the time, And so that's why I say, be an opportunist. It's like being a waterfowl hunter. You say, oh, I'm only going to hunt snow geese, and that's it. Well, what if the snow geese aren't down yet? What if you're looking at a flock of 500 snow geese and there isn't a single juvenile in the bunch and there's no ducks with them? Like, what if,
Yeah.
you're looking at some snow geese over in that cornfield and you can't get permission? Like, you got to be an opportunist. You guys got to roll with whatever, If it needs putting on a pair of waders and throwing a couple dozen floaters out, fine. I'm happy doing that one day. If I got to put field decoys out for Canada geese, I'm good. I'm just here for the ride, I mean, be an opportunist, and that's the whole key, I think. It's easier for us to change and adapt than it is for us to try to will Mother Nature at times.
Yeah, that's a
It
mouthful right there, man. That is a
is. I mean.
big mouthful right there. I mean, I'm gonna caption this podcast that, I think, because I mean, honestly, because I just yeah, in some cases it's comical, but then in other cases it's just kind of sad and head scratching that there's so much negativity and just negativity towards, good, honest people that are looking for a fishing report because they want to go fishing, and then man, they just get jumped on, like, don't even come here, don't even go to Devil's Lake. I don't know, Devil's Lake's an awesome place to promote, and but just when you get there, there's a few things you gotta get kind of clued into that that's might be worth your time to spend on the walleyes, if you're not geared up to move and groove and look for some perch. But it ain't like there's no perch in the lake either. So I don't know. Anyways, beating a dead horse a little bit, but it is definitely something on my mind. All right, Jason, I know we're up against the clock here, so I got to let you go. But man, I really appreciate the time. It's a great conversation, and we'll do it again here in the near future.
Yep. All right. We'll talk later.